International students are to be offered a 2-year work visa after graduating from British university. The government has announced this week, overturning a key plank of Theresa May's restrictive immigration policies. Currently, graduates with bachelor's or master's degrees are allowed to look for work for only 4 months. From next year, all international graduates could qualify for a 2-year period to work in the UK, increasing their chances of finding long-term employment after studying. The measure goes further than the Home Office's latest immigration white paper, which proposed extending the 4-month limit to 6 months and the limit for those with doctorates to a year. It's a return to the policy that was scrapped by the coalition government in 2012. Theresa May's Home Secretary said the 2-year post-study work visa was too generous. It's a move that's welcomed by my two guests today, the IEA's Head of Political Economy, Dr. Christian Nemeth. Hi, Christian.
Hello.
And Associate Director Kate Andrews. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Darren.
Now, Kate, in your City AM column today, you recount in a It's a very moving piece, actually. You recount your own experiences with the UK's visa system, having had to return to the US following your graduation, rather than staying and working in Britain. And that's despite the fact you've been here how long?
Just under a decade.
And you still don't have the right to remain, is that right?
No, I don't. So I graduated in June 2012, and in early April 2012, the policy was changed so that non-EU foreign students could only stay in the UK for a few months after they graduated to find work. Now, this was a very meaningful change because in order for us to stay, we have to be on a tier 5 or a tier 2 visa. And when you go to an employer and you're applying for a job, it's hard enough as a young graduate, you don't have a huge skill set. To say you also have to get me a visa can be very daunting. So what the 2-year limit did is it gave graduates the opportunity to get a job like any normal person in the world, get to know their employer, and then get their employer to sponsor them down the line so they could stay. Putting a 4-month limit on it just, you know, made it really very difficult, if not near impossible, for graduates to ask their employers to secure their employment rights. And I was graduating. I spent, you know, almost 4 years in the UK at this point. I was planning on staying longer. And 2 months before I graduated, the policy was changed with no grandfather clause. So the plans that we had been making, my peer group and me, to stay, went out the window. If you stay past that 4 months, you become an illegal migrant. You are breaking the law, and that wasn't going to be an option for me, so I headed back. And that's actually changed my life ever since. I think, as I say in the piece, you know, one of the joys that policy wonks get is that we know that even tinkering at the edges of public policy can mean real change. Sometimes it's very positive, sometimes it's very negative. And this might seem like a small change to the immigration policy in the UK, but actually has a huge impact. Because when I left, I had to go back to zero in terms of the time that I put in the UK to get leave to remain. So under the old system, I could have been 6 years into my time, needing a visa for 4 more to get leave to remain. But, you know, this policy has impacted me every day since, because I'm still not qualified despite having spent so much time here and, you know, being a tax contributor and really making almost my whole adult life in the UK. I'm still not eligible because of Theresa May's policy change.
So that must be a real genuine source of anxiety. I mean, how many times have you actually thought, oh, this is it, they're going to kick me out now?
The visa process is difficult. It's very specific, and if you mess up one thing, they have the right to reject you. It certainly can make one anxious. It's not the easiest process. I think the main reason I flagged this up, though, is that, well, for 2 reasons, actually. I'm one of the most privileged migrants in the UK. I'm from the USA. I was educated at the university level in the UK. I speak English. You know, I tick all the privilege boxes. And it's still this hard to secure my life here. If you think about those who are from minority backgrounds, who don't speak English as a first language, refugees, they're subject to home raids, to detentions, to deportations. You know, so my story is one of the more positive ones, and that's the problem. You know, if it's this hard for me, how difficult is it for everyone else? And the other reason I wanted to flag it is that there is a whole bunch of recent graduates who aren't going to be subject to the new changes. I'm very, very pleased that the government has reversed this policy. They're definitely going down the right track. I would hope that they would extend it to recent graduates as well, because there's no reason that somebody graduating this year should have to leave, and somebody graduating next year, the year after, should be able to stay.
So what would the removal of this, or rather, what did the removal of the two-year work visa mean for you? I mean, do you think this is all about this sort of unhealthy obsession with the tens of thousands target? Is that what it was all about, basically?
Well, the former Prime Minister and at the time Home Secretary Theresa May made it very clear that she wanted to cut net migration, very obsessed with this tens of thousands target, which the government has never been able to reach. And actually going after legal migrants is one of the easiest ways to do that, because, you know, people like me weren't going to overstay our welcome. We didn't want a red flag on our passport. So, you know, you can win in that sense, but who's really winning? Mrs. May said that these that the measures for migrants at the time, for students, were too generous. I mean, personally, I think that's nonsense. We weren't eligible to receive public funds. There wasn't anything generous about the system. It was just letting people that you've trained and educated stay to become taxpayers. But they really were obsessed with this target on migration, and so they went after students.
Christian, if the last two, as Kate has just said out there, if the government's policies are so obviously bad for the country, the economy, making it harder to attract global talent that we've educated here, is it worth asking what are policymakers thinking? You know, why, where does this mindset come from? And do you think it's still here despite this reversal, this reverse back to the old policy?
Yes, I think it is very much still here, because this is just one example. I think where it comes from is this. I would describe May's immigration policies as the worst kind of populism, in the sense that it's a populism which isn't even popular. So a conventional populist would target unpopular groups. Donald Trump is the classic example, or if you think about the Leave.eu campaign and their poster, Breaking Point, this is conventional populism. There, we may not approve of what they're doing, but at least we get why they're doing it. It's not, there's nothing baffling about it. Theresa May's kind of populism was going after popular groups. Students, international students, are one of the most popular groups of immigrants that there are. There are plenty of surveys on this, and even people who are generally skeptical about immigration are normally very positive about international students coming here, partly because they're seen as net contributors, and this is empirically correct. They are net contributors, contributing about 20 billion in total per year, net contribution. But also, I think, because a lot of people, people who are generally skeptical of migration tend to be very patriotic people, so they tend to approve of certain types of immigration, namely those that they see as a compliment for their country. Because if you're a patriot, you want people to tell you your country is great, and students choosing the UK to study, that is a way of doing that. It's easy for a diplomat to say, oh yeah, this is a great country, but somebody actually making the choice to study here, work here, live here, that is a much stronger form of expressing approval. So therefore, this is a very popular group of migrants. In fact, a lot of people don't see them as migrants. A survey on that as well, where you're presenting various fictitious characters who are here for various reasons, and then you ask people, is this person an immigrant in your view? And in the case of international students, only one in four people say yes. So most people don't see them as migrants. But May's policies consisted of making life harder for the most popular groups, students being one example, but also last year, the Home Office has rejected thousands of doctors, engineers, computer specialists, highly skilled professionals. And it was all because the visas that had been allocated to them had run out. There's an absolute limit, a cap ceiling. And once that limit has been reached, then computer says no.
And then in your recent paper, which I will post a link to in the description, you call for the net migration target to be abolished. But you argue that that question of whether or not students should be included in net migration figures would then almost become, well, redundant. Yeah. But as long as the target does exist, students should not be counted towards it. Why do you think they do? And why do you think they should? We should scrap students in particular?
Right. Well, you can make a good case for simply not counting students as immigrants. Most people don't see it that way. And if you did that, they would no longer be in the migration target. It's just that would be statistically a bit awkward. The way the migration statistics currently work is they don't differentiate by why you're coming here, what the exact reason is, and it might be technically hard to do that. So therefore saying, okay, count them as immigrants if you want to, but just don't count them towards that target. That would make sense because if you have a target of 100,000 people, and if international students are already the largest group within that, there can be 50,000 in some years, then you don't have a lot of flexibility left. And if you then also have European migrants in that remaining group, where at least for the moment nothing can be done, as long as we have free movement rules, then you don't have much flexibility left. You then have to clamp down especially hard on the remaining groups, and then you get outcomes like this.
And then the Migration Advisory Council argued that large numbers of graduates chose to work in low-skilled jobs for prolonged periods, and the way in which to rectify that, in quotes, was via visa rules. I mean, what do you make of that?
They would say that if you make it easier, as is to some degree happening now, you would get people staying on and working in low-skilled jobs. I think that's overblown. I don't see that happening, really. It doesn't strike me as plausible that somebody would come here, spend a lot of money and time on getting a degree, and then working as a cleaner for the rest of their lives. That's just not a plausible scenario. What could happen, of course, is that you will get people who graduate, but then go into a sector of the economy where you don't have a streamlined career path. Such as journalism or the creative industries, where you might do a series of internships or you might work on a project, but you're not an employee yet, and you also work in a pub at the same time to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. That can be a perfectly sensible route into one of those less conventional sectors, but in the Home Office statistics, you would appear as a graduate who now works in a low-skilled job, and the bureaucrat would then say, well, what's this about? Mm. But I really don't see that as an issue. And it's not even that is massively unpopular. There are surveys as well on whether students, graduates, should have the right to stay here and keep working in any job. And something like 60% of the public are in favor of that, actually, for at least 2 years. And many of them would go much higher, would go to 3, 4, 5 years. So this is actually fairly popular. They are, by definition, once they have a degree, they are skilled migrants. It is true that, but that's true across the whole student population, that you have a lot of graduates working in non-graduate jobs. But non-graduate doesn't mean low-skilled automatically. Until a couple of years ago, nursing was not a degree-level job. It's clearly not an unskilled job. It just meant it is not the kind of skill that can be expressed in a university diploma.
And to go back to that critical point, you can't access public benefits while doing it. Yeah. So if you are working in a low-skilled job, if you're working in 3 low-skilled jobs to pay the rent, you are taking care of your own finances. And I think that's really the key, as Christian says, you know, it's relatable, isn't it? It's quite human. If you've just left any kind of schooling and you need to get on your feet and you're not hired right away, you may well take a job in a pub or a coffee shop to cover the bills. This doesn't mean it's going to be your lifelong career. It doesn't mean you're taking those jobs indefinitely from others who might want them. And you're paying your own way. That's the key. It wasn't any kind of drain on the British taxpayer. If anything, in the next 5 years, they're going to be the taxpayer who's propping up public services.
So, Kate, then, do you reckon that given the popularity of international students that Christian has set out there, that with some people not even seeing them as a migrant group, The government should actually make it easier for foreign students to come here to work alongside their studies and work here after their studies. It just makes sense.
I think it makes complete sense. And I'm really pleased that the government is tackling this head on. So much work has to be done on the UK's immigration system. It is extremely restrictive. I would argue in many ways it's more restrictive than the US system now. Everybody assumes that because Donald Trump is sitting in the Oval Office that the US must be very difficult to immigrate to, and it is. It's not easy, but actually, in many ways, especially when it comes to caps and visas and things, the UK has a very restrictive system. And a country that is about to step onto the global stage when it exits the European Union should be looking to recruit talent from all over the world. And you know, I like this podcast dynamic because Christian and I are neither originally from the UK. Christian's come from the EU. I haven't. And the rules are extremely different for us. Now, I think actually, Christian and I have very similar opinions about immigration. We're both very pro. But, you know, when you start to get into the debate about free movement and who can come here and who can't, for me, it really is about opening up. And as long as, you know, people are contributing in some way, and there are lots of different ways to contribute, give them the chance to go in the world where their skills can be most used.
Yes, I think the issue is at the moment our whole immigration debate is based on a lie, the lie that people only care about numbers. Because it's a controversial subject. Everyone's afraid of saying the wrong thing. And the way that people who have concerns about immigration have, if you will, sanitize it, is by saying it's all about scale. Nothing wrong with migrants or any particular group of them. It's just that the sheer scale of it is overwhelming the country. It's just that that isn't true. I don't think that's how anyone truly thinks about the issue. And the way to see how is just to do the simple thought experiment that imagine the 5 million British expats who live abroad permanently on the Spanish coast or wherever all decided to come back. The impact on infrastructure and public services would be exactly the same, but you would be hard-pressed in such a case to find anyone who would say, no, keep those people out, they shouldn't have a right to come here. It really is about issues like integration and social disruption that can be caused by immigration, and there's nothing illegitimate about those fears. I think we should just be more honest about it.
And then to end, for both of you, I wonder if you could tell me, given that the government seems to be moving in a more liberalizing direction on issues like this than past administrations have been, what would you like to see from the government in the area of immigration moving forward? Case?
I think they need to scrap the target of tens of thousands very soon. And the government needs to get out of its head that it can centrally determine what skill sets and what immigrants are going to be needed for the British economy in years to come. So, for example, there was some applause a few weeks ago because the Home Secretary created an exception, I think, for the Vindaloo visa, saying they were going to make sure that those who own curry houses were going to be able to come here more easily or stay more easily. And actually, you know, it's good and well to applaud that. And whenever Boris Johnson makes an announcement about who can stay, there was one about scientists recently, I think, well, that is great for scientists. But why does the government think it knows what the economy is going to need in 5 years' time? I mean, very often it can barely get its own act together, let alone predict what's going to be needed by business and what skill sets are going to be necessary in the UK. So I think, you know, to liberalize the system so that businesses without any kind of cap can find it to be a relatively easy process to bring in the migrants and the skill sets that they need would be a very good step in the right direction. And I think government needs to give more of the power back to businesses in the private and charity sector rather than to say themselves who can and cannot stay, as Christian points out, for an extremely arbitrary figure that actually a lot of people, when you start digging down, don't really care about.
Christian? Well, I would like to see free movement making a comeback, the concept of free movement. I know that's not going to happen for now. It is going to end in probably 2021. But the concept, it's not true to say that free movement is per se unpopular. For example, there is a huge majority that is, a two-thirds majority roughly, that is in favor of free movement, for example, between the so-called CANZUC nations, Canada, UK, Australia, New Zealand. And I'm guessing if you included the US in this, it wouldn't look very different. If you included Western Europe, it wouldn't look very different. It's generally the case that most people are quite comfortable with free movement among culturally similar, similarly economically developed nations. And I would like to bring that back or save as much of it as possible for the European free movement and extend that beyond Europe so that you have a two-lane system where you have a visa system for some groups and this fast lane for others. And the reason, the case for free movement is especially the simplicity. If you are at the moment a European national, it's not that you get privileged treatment from the Home Office. It just means that you have nothing to do with the Home Office whatsoever. That's why I don't have stories of that kind to tell. I never had any contact with the Home Office until, well, until just now. I now had to apply for settled status. But before that, I was barely aware that that department even existed. And that's not just beneficial for the individual migrant, that's also great for every British citizen who interacts with them. Because as you said, if you employ a non-EU migrant as an employer, you must have a sponsorship visa, and that can be a complex, bureaucratic and costly process. Not so if you employ EU nationals. And the same is true for landlords or NHS organizations. You can just assume that if you're an EU national, you have the same rights as a British citizen, and that will be that. No paperwork involved, no bureaucracy, no fear and anxiety. And that's great. I think the government was, well, particularly May, but now the current government as well, was too quick to interpret the referendum result as an anti-free movement vote, because, well, there's free movement and there's free movement. Free movement rules are interpreted differently in different parts of Europe. Some have a more restrictive interpretation of it. And I think it would have made sense to try something milder first before saying we're going to end this completely. Why not say we're moving from the more permissive end to the more restrictive end? For example, if you want to live in Switzerland, Switzerland is not part of the single market, but they've signed up to free movement, but they are interpreting the rules in a more restrictive way. If you move to Switzerland, you have to register with the local council within 2 weeks. You have to apply for a residence and work permit. And you must have a work contract already for that, and you can't claim benefits. And if you don't have that, you can be removed. You can be asked to leave. And that's still compatible with free movement rules. That could be done. That's something that Britain could have done years ago. It's just that Britain has taken this approach of first not caring at all about enforcing the limits of free movement, and now moving to the opposite extreme of abolishing it completely. I think it would have made sense to say, let's modify it within the scope that we have first. Let's do this for a couple of years and see how it goes. And then let's extend that also. Let's give people from other countries similar rights. Why not have the same rights for people from New Zealand, Canada, Australia, or Hong Kong and Singapore?
I think that's such an important point that Christian flags up, because so often in terms of lots of areas of public policy, but especially immigration, the debate is all or nothing. You either have to be, you know, close the borders or open them up completely. And that just isn't the case, even with something like free movement. There are varying degrees and nuances. And what I would hope is that all of us, regardless of our perspective on immigration, could just take away the human element of it, which is that current policy, even small changes to it, can have massive impacts on people's lives. I mean, absolutely massive. And we need to be more humane about this process. We need to recognize what people do to come here. You know, I mean, again, my story is the nice one, but what people really do and the struggles that they have to overcome to be in a freer society like the UK, and often how much those people want to stay and contribute. I think if we can add the human touch to a lot of those stories, we can make our immigration policy better.
Kate and Christian, thank you very much for joining me
today. Thanks.
Now, please let me know what you think by tweeting at IEA London. You can find Christian's paper on this and, well, entirely all about immigration, actually, and a more sensible approach on the IEA website. And I'll post that in a link on the description. For more podcast films and reports, visit our website at iea.org.uk.